Hello, I'm Dennis Nance. I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
It's good to be back in Georgia. I like the Georgia enthusiasm in Alcoholics Anonymous. We got Baptists back up in South Carolina. It's like Alcoholics Anonymous down here. We get excited and holler sometimes. It's good to be back. I'd like to thank Jerry and the committee for having me down. It's good to see some old friends again. That's always good. I think sometimes it's good for me to get away from home so I can relax. And, you know, I think God put this trip together. You know, a lot of times I'll just say, yeah, I'm going to do something. I don't even think about it until I look at my calendar and say, you know, I need to be in Georgia in a couple of days, you know. As a matter of fact, I just left Atlanta Wednesday and back in. But Thursday before I left work, my pager broke. So they can't get in contact with me. And they sent me a note about 10 days ago that said, you've got to run this program on your computer, and if you don't, you're not going to be able to access the computer by calling in. I had a doctor's appointment, so I can't do any work. I guess I'm supposed to be at the Altoona Conference Roundup this weekend. So that's what I'm going to do is a whole lot of nothing. That's what I need to do. Charles knows me, Jerry knows me, and I guess everybody that knows me knows that I have some opinions, and it's difficult for me to share my experience, strength, and hope without sharing my beliefs and opinions and stuff, but it's just difficult for me to do. You know, that's one of the first things I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, is that if you're sober and you got a big book and you got a sponsor and you're black and you're 6'4" and weigh 250 pounds, you can have an opinion if you want it, you know. So I got my if y'all don't like them, I won't come back no more. But I won't come back anymore if you don't like them. But I think you're gonna hear them tonight. One of my first opinions is that I believe. That I am sober by the grace of a loving God who manifests himself in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am also one that believes that there's a difference between the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I also think that God, my higher power, if I understand him, manifests himself in the numerous personalities and friends that I've met since beginning the journey of recovery. And with every person I meet, the circle of love gets bigger. I believe that I grow from every personality, every person that I meet, every meeting I sit in. I don't think a minute of my time has been wasted since I joined Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety date is February 1st of 1981. And this is a good microphone at times, isn't it? That sounded just like I wanted to sound for so many years, you know. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I just didn't like being here. Alcoholics Anonymous is one of the few places I knew from the minute I came in that I belonged. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, there were some old guys. Didn't want to be there. I didn't want to be there. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because some other people thought I needed to be there. Or at least I thought they thought I needed to be there. I wasted a lot of time in Alcoholics Anonymous watching other people watch me. There was about six old guys that sat on the back row of Alcoholics Anonymous. Had a concrete wall like that with that old epoxy paint on it, you know. And these guys, I guess they had been sober so long that they had little brown spots where their hair had been up against that paint. You know? You could tell when one was missing, you know. And I guess they were kind of old because all of them had one-syllable names. I don't guess they could remember a name like Dennis. They had two siblings. They had names like Stick and Jack and Bill and Bob. I said, man, I'll tell you, these guys must have bad memories. And they sit back there and they appear to go to sleep as the meeting opened. Some of them had bib overalls on. I was convinced that these guys were retired and they sat at home all day thinking of stuff to say to hurt my feelings when I came to the meeting. So I spent a lot of time watching them, because I didn't think they liked me. I got my feelings hurt a lot. But these old guys, eventually, they began to love me in a way that I had never been loved before. These guys began to tell me the truth. And I don't know about you, but I didn't like the truth when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I guess they had a spokesman. A.D. was the spokesman. He came up and one night at the Fisher Park meeting in Greensboro, and he said, boy, we've diagnosed your problem. And, see, I knew I was different. And he said, you seem to be suffering from malnutrition between the ears. I didn't go through treatment, and I didn't get to taper off alcohol on Librium and those pills, you know, so it took me a little while to figure things out. But after about 2 weeks, I figured it out. I said, that guy called me stupid. I had learned, you just don't come to assumptions and conclusions like that without talking to somebody. So I asked my friend Ivy, I said, Ivy, I believe A.D. called me stupid. He said, Dennis, that was 2 weeks ago. I said, well, it took that long for me to figure it out. But A.D. was trying to tell me what was obvious to everybody else. You see, I had reached that point in my illness where the only way I could feel good is by taking the very thing that made me feel bad. And the only way I thought I could solve my problem is by picking up another bottle of the problem. A.D. could see that. I couldn't see it. I was on the merry-go-round, and it was obvious to everybody except me. Now, these old guys did me another favor. Back then, they just didn't say, don't drink and go to meetings. They said, don't drink, and they told you exactly what meetings to go to. And I learned later on it's because they show up at those meetings. And they sit back there again and evaluate you. And back then, it didn't bother you too much until they were sure you were serious about getting sober. And I began to go to these meetings. And as a result of these meetings, I concluded a couple of things. The first thing I concluded is that my illness is in me. Not in a bottle. Has nothing to do with the highway patrol or my wife snitching on me. My illness is right where A.D. said it was. It's between my ears. See, it's not like alcohol is hiding in the back seat of my car and I start backing out of the driveway to go to work in the morning and it jumps on me and starts choking me and gets me drunk. Or like I'm sleeping. And I wake up at 2:30 in the morning, I go use the bathroom, alcohol's hiding under my bed, trips me, jumps up my back, and I end up drunk. Every time I've ever got drunk, I went and got it. I concluded that alcohol don't bother me until I bother it. So my problem has to be internal. The other thing I concluded is I was in the right place because I had felt like you felt. Now, I didn't know anything about sponsorship, didn't know anything about the program. Didn't know anything about staying sober. Didn't want to know a whole lot about staying sober. But I knew that I had felt like you felt. I had acted like you. I had drank like you drank. I knew I was where I belonged. And I came to know Dennis Nance. Some of the Dennis Nance I'm going to share with you tonight. I was born and raised in Cleveland County, North Carolina. And back then, Cleveland County was nothing but cotton fields and corn fields. And I guess the only places I went with any consistency was those cotton fields. School and church, that was it. Now, from my earliest recollection, I don't think I fit in anywhere. I just didn't feel like I fit in. I always felt too ugly, too dumb, too stupid. I always felt like I had to do something extra to be your friend. And I started having trouble right off the bat. I was scared of everything, but I couldn't tell you that. I had to act like I was cool, act like I knew what to do. I remember we were uptown at Aunt Truelove's house on Saturday, driving Daddy's old 49 Ford. And back then, they didn't have Burger King and all that stuff where you could stop and use the bathroom. Mom lined all those kids up. Y'all come and use the bathroom. We're getting ready to go home. And Aunt Truelove had a marvelous contraption right outside her back door. It was in the house. It was an inside toilet. I had never seen one of those things. But I knew I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't know whether that was a white bucket or what it was sitting there in the floor. But I knew I had a little time to think about it. Because I was the third kid. It had Janice, Linda, me, and then they had four more. And Janice went in. I just stood there in line. And all of a sudden, Janice bursted through that door with her panties around her ankles. She was hollering and crying. I didn't know what happened to her in there, you know. I guess what happened was Mom flushed that thing before Janice got off of it, and it just kind of scared her, you know. But, you see, well, in any event, see, I didn't have to use the bathroom no more all of a sudden. You know? Mama said, "Dennis, big boys don't do that." I said, "Well, I guess I ain't gonna ever be a big boy." Because I was always doing that stuff that big boys didn't do. And then I started wearing glasses when I was 5 years old. Those old welfare glasses with the hook handles on them. They were brown. Hinges never tightened up on them. Still couldn't see. You're looking under one and under the other, and they sit on your eyes half sideways. And then Daddy, I guess Daddy knew what style was, because Dad would give you these bootleg haircuts on Saturday night. And they seemed to match very well with those welfare glasses. But those haircuts were crooked too, you know. Dad just couldn't get it right, you know. And Mom would come along and say, "Elder, can you put them apart?" And they'd say, "Yeah, you just put one in there." You know, Dad's old country boy, you know. Dad's hands were too big to even hold those clippers, you know. I was in the Army before I realized that haircuts were not supposed to hurt. He had been pulling my hair out all those years, you know. So I got this crooked haircut with a crooked part in it, and Mom would say, "Elder, can you straighten that part out a little bit?" He just put another one in beside it, you know. So here it is, 1960. I got these brown welfare glasses on, and I got a one-sided haircut with four or five parts in my head. And man, I tell you, well, back in 1960, it wasn't cool to have all. Now, today, I would have been right on time. I just get me a pair of those big britches and pull them about halfway down. We in business, you know. But you know, here I am. I ain't even out of the starting blocks of life. And I'm already not just feeling weird, I'm looking weird. But some beautiful things happened in Shelby. I think I was prepared for Alcoholics Anonymous in the basement of Shoal Creek Baptist Church. I think that I sat in Shoal Creek Baptist Church and began to perfect the very character defects that would keep me consumed by my illness for years. I learned how to act in church. First thing I learned to do is I learned how to act like you want me to act. Do what you want me to do. Look like you want me to look. Man, I could quote those scriptures and it sounds so good. See, I could do that stuff until you quit looking. And then I did what I wanted to do. Stayed in trouble, but I did it. And see, I learned how to memorize stuff. Developed a pretty good memory. I could quote those Bible lessons. Got so good by the time I was in my teen years, I didn't even have to read a Sunday school book. A combination of my memory and my ability to lie, I could sound real good in Sunday school. I think that that memory and that ability to put on the show are probably my worst two liabilities today. You see, I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous long enough to be evasive. I can go to my home group. And they say, "Well, Dennis, how you doing?" I say, "Well, I'm doing fine. Just keep smiling, dance right on by and go to my seat. And know that there's something I need to talk about. Or I'll disappear and not call for a couple of weeks." I know how to act. Know what to do. I can look good. I was telling David, "Man, we look good tonight. You know, we don't know how we feel, but we look good." Now, the other thing that I have, and my other worst liability, is that memory. You know, it doesn't take long to memorize parts of the big book and parts of the 12 and 12 and other recovery material. Everybody knows at least one page number they can quote. See, the problem with that is, you know what it says in the fifth chapter? It doesn't say, "Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly memorized our book." It says, "Follow the path." Let's see. My problem all my life has been I never wanted to follow the path. I never wanted to do anything. It became apparent to me early in Alcoholics Anonymous that I'm the guy that sat through church, and it seemed like I was doing what everybody else did. I was reading about it. I was baptized. It seemed that I was doing everything everybody else was doing, and they seemed to get it, and I didn't. I did that in school. I sat between two sisters that were each skipped a grade in school. I sat there doing absolutely nothing. But you know, my alcoholic ego told me I was going to be skipped any time. Spent 12 years. I had to do it the hard way. Never got skipped. I don't know why. I like doing nothing. I've concluded, and it's another opinion of mine, that weightlifters don't get big muscles lifting light weights. People don't become governor scholars getting easy teachers. And Dennis Nash didn't get sober until he got busy working on those stems. I've concluded that I can't expect to get what the promises say that I'll get unless I'm willing to do what the fifth chapter suggests I do. And it just happened that way with me. It might work differently from other people, but that's the way it worked with Dennis Nance. Well, another thing I like about Cleveland County is people were just people. You know, some good things about the cotton field and the economy back then. You know, I missed the Civil Rights Movement. And the reason I missed the Civil Rights Movement, because in cotton picking time, you know, I was picking cotton when the news came up. I didn't get to see it. But see, in Cleveland County, blacks and whites ate out of the same garden, played in the same yard, picked cotton in the same cotton field. We went everywhere except school and church together. And even then, you might see an interracial service in church sometimes. I remember old Herman Weaver, the neighborhood mechanic. I'd be playing up there with Jack Hammer, some white guys, and he'd say, "Ain't you Elder's boy?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, take this car home and tell him to come and see me." He never saw money exchange hands. But between 8th and 9th grade, mandatory integration came. And I began to feel weird for the first time in my life. The first thing that happened is I didn't even feel like I fit in with black folk. Because in the 8th grade, we had an end of the school year party, and man, that's when I knew I was different. The first thing I know is I couldn't talk to the women. Everybody else could talk to the women. I couldn't talk to the women. And they could dance. I couldn't dance. I sat and looked at them until the length of that party, and by the time I got ready to make my move, the party was over. And then they were listening to stuff like Martha Reeves and the Vandellas and the Temptations, Gladys Knight and the Pips. I had never heard any of that strange music. I'd been laying in the bathtub on Saturday night listening to a country music station out of Gaffney. I've been listening to Buck and the Buckaroos and Conway Twitty and the Twitty Birds and Merle Haggard and the Strangers. You know, that sounds like a group I might fit in with. I like them, you know. And here I am, I'm 13 years old. And I'm black and I ain't cool. And I'm a soul brother and I ain't got soul. But now that summer, I found something that would do the trick. Me and my friend Kel was playing. I like Kel. Kel, my friend. Now, Kel, I'm going to see Kel in October. The reason why Kel, my friend, is because Kel listens slower than I talk. And I kept that sucker in trouble all his life. We laid out there in the corn crib and found some of Grandpa's liquor and drank it. It was Kel's idea. Both of us two little Baptist boys. We knew what the stuff was, knew we wasn't supposed to have it. But you know, 5 minutes after I drank it, I got this warm sensation in my stomach. It went on down to my kneecaps. Man, I felt good. I had never felt like that before. You know, I could just feel those parts synthesizing to one, you know. You know, didn't need the glasses no more. I told Kel, I said, "Kel, you know, I think I got that 20/20 vision, man. I'm seeing two of everything here, you know. I'm seeing what everybody else is seeing, you know." Yeah. And we hid up under the plum bushes down there, and we told some jokes and looked at the sunset and talked about what we'd do to those Brittany girls if they came over the hill. They ain't come. We didn't get to do it. But we went up back up the hill, and you know, we're just feeling good enough to do something mischievous. And somehow we figured we ought to give Grandpa his liquor back, and we did. We urinated back in the bottle and hid it back where we found it. I don't know where he ever got it. You know, just mischievous stuff. But you know something? I knew I had to have me some more of that stuff. Didn't know how I was going to get it, but I knew when the opportunity presented itself, I was going to get me some more of that. I liked that feeling. Didn't find any, so I was going to make some myself. Got some berries out of the backyard. We moved off the farm into a housing development, and I brewed up those berries. And, you know, nobody told me how to make wine. I just know stuff like that. You ever just know stuff? You know. I'd be in bars, and somebody walk up and say something about the space shuttle. All of a sudden, I know stuff. You know, I just start giving a little lecture on the space shuttle, how to peel rockets and stuff like that. I made me some wine. And I knew it was supposed to ferment. It had to be in the dark, because alcohol won't get in it while you're looking. It's got to be in the dark. With those five sisters running around, and a brother that's 4 years younger with a loud mouth, so, you know, dug a hole in the backyard and buried those two jars or whatever that was. And Went back and sat on the back porch for about 5 minutes. Said, well, it's ready now. Dug one up and drank it. Didn't do anything. I was walking around looking up in the air for the feeling. Man, where'd that feeling come from that last time, you know? And it just never happened. But thinking again, I said, well, maybe it needs a little help getting the alcohol in it. Maybe it needs a little bit to get it started. So I got a little rubbing alcohol out of the medicine cabinet, poured that in there. And now, that didn't produce the high. It produced the worst case of gas I ever had in my life. But if you're from Cleveland County, any kind of entertainment's good, you know. But I began high school, you know, college preparatory track, expecting to play basketball. And I drank myself out of the athletic program in 2 years, drank myself out of a school bus route in a year and 20 days. And I just became a professional wino. I don't know why I was attracted to wine. And it's not just the drinking of wine that I like. It's the whole atmosphere. You know, I'd be going to school and I'd look out there and see these guys building houses. And they'd be standing by that barrel rubbing their hands, warming their hands. You see the little bottle sticking out of their pocket. I said, now that's cool. I like that. That's the kind of stuff I like. I don't know why. I just like it. But by the time I finished high school, my alcoholism was in full swing. I remember the neighbors coming down and talking with my father and saying, Eldred, you better make that boy play ball. Make him play ball. And Dad said, well, if he don't want to do it, I don't think he's going to do it. I know that at least I cheated myself out of a free college education. I was confronted with my alcoholism 4 times in my senior year of high school. As a matter of fact, in my last 2 weeks of high school. The first person that confronted me with my drinking was Lois Sauls, my English teacher for 4 years. Said, Dennis, I think you're alcoholic. I said, I think you have a drinking problem. I discounted that. She's an adult, a school teacher. You drink one beer and they think you're just a drug addict, you know. She showed me my work, showed me my attendance record. And back then, teachers knew your parents, they knew you, knew your sisters. I discounted that. But you know, the next 3 people that said anything about my drinking were classmates, 17 years old, just like me. That was Sylvia Spears. Had her doing my history homework. She said, Dennis, I think you're alcoholic. Man, I tell you, it's just like putting a knife through my heart. I didn't know what an alcoholic was, but I knew it wasn't something to be proud of. I had never heard the word in a sentence before, but that hurt me. Then there was Linda Lowe. Linda Lowe was so beautiful. And she was actually non-material. She was just so pure. I was scared to stand close to her. I thought maybe I might contaminate her, get her dirty or something, you know. But Linda Lowe actually wrote in my annual, Dennis, stay off the booze. You're a nice guy. Stay off the booze and everything will be okay. And then Janice Morgan. Janice Morgan is so honest and so blunt that she is still not married today. And we both just turned 45 last summer. Janice Morgan wrote in my annual, Dennis, someday reality will hit you in the face and you won't know what to do. That's pretty heavy stuff for 17 years old. You know, it's hard to explain to your mom what they mean by that. My alcoholism was kind of like having body odor. You know, when the guy that's stinking finds out he's stinking, everybody else has known for a long time, you know? And that's the way it was with me. They would say, Dennis, we smell something. I said, I wonder who it is. Can't be me. And by the time I graduated from high school, I was angry at everybody. I was angry at my parents because they wanted me to do the things that any loving parent wants their kid to do. Go to college, go to church, quit crawling in the bathroom window at 5 o'clock in the morning. I got mad and joined the Army. They had told me I wouldn't be able to join the Army because my eyes were too bad. My recruiter said I had the best set of eyes he'd seen that week. I was on the bus to shop that Monday morning. But you know, I wanted to hurt everybody's feelings before I left. Dad was a big guy, and 6'3" and weighed 265 pounds, wore size 13 triple E shoe. I still got the imprint back here. I can measure it sometimes. But Dad was sitting on the front porch, smoking my cigarettes. You know, Dad don't know anything about addiction. Kid grow up, they start smoking, Dad starts smoking. They move out, Dad quit smoking. Did that with all 7 kids. Dad was sitting on the front porch, said, Dad, I joined the Army. He said, that's good, you ain't doing nothing else, go tell your mom. I tell you, this can't hurt the guy's feelings, you know. And then I I went and tell Mom, because Mom wanted me to, she's the one that wanted me to do all this good stuff, take typing, all that stuff. And I said, Mom, I joined the Army. She said, Dennis, no, you didn't. I said, yes, I did. She started crying and hollering and rolling all over that bed. Man, I enjoyed it. I finally got them back. That's right. Teaching the mess with me. 4 weeks later, I was down at Fort Jackson crying, hollering, rolling all over my bed. I was in bad shit, you know. That started another path. Anybody that loved me, I seemed to sabotage it. And my military career lasted 8 years. I did a tour in Vietnam, well, half a tour in Vietnam. Only spent 6 months in Vietnam. Came back to Vietnam and I married Libra. And by the way, Libra sends her love. She's at another retreat in the North Carolina mountains. First time we haven't been traveling together in a long time. But she tried to get out of it, but she's gone anyway. The Al-Anon's got her. Anyway. But we got married and moved out to Oklahoma. Actually, my son was born while I was in Vietnam. And we just had a nice little alcoholic family. And we got out to Oklahoma and we started doing those things that sick alcoholic families do. Fussing, fighting, arguing over the paycheck. No budget. Sneaking around trying to find me in the clubs on Saturday night. That's just the way it was. And we spent our whole military career doing that. We went to Germany for 3.5 years. You know, and over the course of my military career, except for the time I spent in Vietnam and the time that I was a drill sergeant, I was in nuclear weapons. I accumulated 5 DWIs while I was in the Army. And the Army always transferred me, took care of it. I drove a car into a lake in Germany, and they gave me an Article 15 and fined me $50 to keep the German authorities from prosecuting me. And I continued to get worse. Got back from Germany in 1977. Owed nobody anything. I had ordered a car. It was my pattern. I'd order a big silver Pontiac from General Motors and have it waiting on me when I came in from overseas. And I ordered me a 77 Bonneville. Had never seen one. I'd been in Germany for 3.5 years. And picked up the car, went out to Oklahoma, bought a house. You know, 2 years later, I am drinking uncontrollably, wine in undetermined amounts. I'm the ultimate authority in a position of as a drill sergeant. And at the end of 2 years, I am not just bankrupt mentally and spiritually, I am also bankrupt financially in 24 months. The Army wanted to send me to Korea to get rid of me a while, and Libra was glad they did because she wanted to get rid of me too. I'm a real smart drunk. You know, the last thing I'm going to do is what people want me to do. So I said, I'll just get out. I am not leaving you here with a new car, a new house, another car. Hey, I could see another man walking right on in my castle. You know, I ain't doing that. So I got out. Bought Libra home and prepared to get out of the Army. And I went back out to Oklahoma for my last 45 days in the Army. And with Libra gone and with the kids gone. I could drink like I wanted to drink. I could drink with authority, and I did. And I woke up one day and the water was cut off. Another day the gas was cut off. Eventually the power was cut off. I didn't have Libra there to get it cut on for me. And eventually I woke up about 50 miles from where I was supposed to be, AWOL for the first time as a staff sergeant in the Army. And what had happened is a nice man had kept my house from going into foreclosure by buying it. I salvaged $4,400 out of a $21,000 house. He gave me $4,400. I sent Libra $1,300 of that money, and I woke up in what I know now to be my first recognizable blackout in Hobart, Oklahoma, driving that car around the edge of a wheat field. Absolutely broke. I don't know what happened to that money. Don't think it was robbed. I don't know whether I hid it somewhere and couldn't find it, or all I know is I just didn't know what the money was. And coming home, I came home just like a good drunk's supposed to. I came home drinking Thunderberry wine and writing bad checks. Got home, and how do you explain to Libra where this money is? Libra knows nothing about alcoholism. I don't know anything about alcoholism. Don't know anything about blackouts. And that was the basis for many an argument in our family until we understood the illness of alcoholism. So Libby didn't know where the money was. She said, that's all right, I'm leaving. And she did. She went to Greensboro. And I did what alcoholics do. I got another car and followed her. I went to Greensboro too. And Libby got a job. I drank for 2 more years. And finally, on November of 1980, I was invited home for a Thanksgiving dinner. The first since I left home. And I went home. And I knew they were having little meetings on me, trying to figure out how to get me in one of these VA hospitals. Didn't know what they did there. Didn't know anything about treatment. But I did know this. I did know that in 1976, we got a letter from home. Libra's uncle, who was the town drunk when we were growing up, had gotten sober in this strange thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. And they found that so strange that they wrote us in Germany to tell us. And I remember thinking, it's just a matter of time before they catch up with me. But I didn't think they had them in Germany. But I knew they had them in the States. They were probably hiding behind the liquor store, you know. You go in to buy a little wine, and they're writing your name down and stuff. You know? So I went home. Somebody asked me about going to church or something. I started a big argument and woke up when I know now to be my second recognizable blackout. Hit it back home on 85. That night, I guess I was driving all of 15 miles per hour in the road there, and I began to think about Big Dan. Now, Big Dan was a town drunk when I was growing up. He had this thing called alcoholism, and I knew he drank like I drank. I said, I'm going to call Big Dan when I get back to Greensboro. Well, I got back to Greensboro. You know what happened? I don't need to call him now. I can quit by myself. Never had quit before, but I could then. The first miracle, I think, happened in my life. Big Dan called me. Said he was at a place called Arca, a treatment center in Winston-Salem. I learned, and asked me, could he come by? I said, yeah, come on by. And he came by, and he had a big faded-out book in the back of his car. See, I didn't know how to ask him about alcoholism. And I know now that was probably coffee stains and whatever, but you barely couldn't make out Alcoholics Anonymous on it. I tried to get in his car and steal his book. Couldn't get in his car. So I just went back in and just blurted it out. I said, Dan, tell me what you know about this thing called alcoholism. I said, I didn't know it, but Lieber had been sneaking up to Chapel Hill telling on me, telling how I drank and how much I drank and all that stuff, you know. And so he knew it anyway. And Dan talked for what seemed like 2 hours. And finally Dan said, Dennis, if I dial a number, will you talk? I said, Dan, if you just shut up, I'll talk. A guy on the other end of that phone named James convinced me to be in his office, and I went down there, and I found out it was like a counseling agency. And I went down there, and they gave me a little test. I passed the test. He shared with me some things about himself and his alcoholism. I had never heard a man, especially a black man, talk about himself like that. He talked about being arrested. He talked about filing bankruptcy, abusing his wife verbally, abusing his wife emotionally, neglecting his kids. Man, I'm not, tell you what, I'll tell it on you, but I ain't about to tell it on me. I didn't say anything. I wanted out of there. But before I could get out of there, James gave me a big book, a new one. And that's what I wanted. I wanted that book so I could go home, lay across my bed, read that book, find out what to do, and not have to make these meetings like y'all. Because after all, I was not as bad as you were. And he asked me another question. He asked me, would my wife and kids come into counseling? Now, I knew they would. I didn't want them to. But I knew they would. When we were leaving Germany, Libra, Dennis, and Michelle had all kind of parties, all kind of friends. I'd been over there 3.5 years. I'd been over there longer than they had, but nobody knew me. So I knew they made friends easily. But I didn't want those kids down there, because my kids were only like 7 and 9. And you know, when kids are 9 years old, you have to, if you ain't careful, they'll tell the truth on you, you know. You don't want kids telling the truth on you, you know, if you do what I do. And you know, now the kids were too young for Alateen, so they started counseling and disappeared. Libra just took right on to Al-Anon. Man, things changed around the house. She'd come home and say, Dennis, I'm going on an Al-Anon retreat in 2 weeks. I said, well, Libra, how much does that cost? She'd tell me how much it costs. I said, Libra, we can't afford that. She'd say, can't afford not to. And just leave, you know. No argument, no nothing. Come home on Monday night. I said, Dennis, I'm going to the Al-Anon meeting. If you want to go to a meeting, you arrange babysitting and take the kids with you. It's about time you do that. You're their father. And leave. And see, she'd take the big car, the cool car. I'd have to drive that car out wrecked three times drunk, you know, and with the brown nose on it because you ain't had it painted, you know. And I always wanted to know how I got those DWIs. They just look for the drunk car. You don't ever get them painted again, you know. Things change around the house. I started sneaking around these AA meetings. I'd sit at the back near the coffee pot in the door. And right between A and me and the Lord's track, magic happened. 6'4" black man disappeared. Zoom, I was gone. I didn't hang around for you to hug on me and tell me to keep coming back. I won't be there in the first place. I just did not like it. But I just hung around a while because I knew they thought I ought to be around a while. I got to feeling right sorry for y'all because my memory started coming back. And I said, they probably sold alcohol and their life has become unmanageable. That's what's wrong with it. They can't drink liquor. And see, by that time, I have filed bankruptcy, and my wages are being garnished by the United States Bankruptcy Court, so I didn't even draw a full paycheck for my first 21 months sober. But if you could have come up with the price of a bottle, I'd have showed you how to drink that wine, because I could still do it. I was offended by step two. How can I be restored to something that I hadn't lost? Step three, I was not ready to deal with God. It's amazing how the God, the loving God I had learned about in Sunday school and still believed in somewhat, my perception of him had changed. I didn't want to deal with step three at all, so I started on step four. I don't know about y'all, but I knew a whole lot about step four, and I did a whole lot more about step four than I did about step one when I got here. So I had to start at my own level, you know. I just had to start where I wouldn't skip through school, so I skipped myself through Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I started writing this nice novel. No God, no nothing. You know, I heard somebody say something about sponsorship, but I didn't need sponsorship. See, matter of fact, I couldn't even find anybody to sponsor me. I couldn't find anybody black enough. Couldn't find anybody cool enough. Wasn't a whole lot of married people around those days. Because I tell you, they was in bad shape. The wife just left them, or they run them off on. And I saw a couple of women that smelled real good, you know, looked good, too. But before I could ask them to sponsor me, they'd get up and move. You know, they wouldn't sit beside me long enough. Well, if you can't find anybody to sponsor, you know what I had to do. You know, I had to sponsor myself. And the easiest time I ever had in Alcoholics Anonymous when I was sponsoring myself. I tell you, when you're sponsoring yourself, you don't have to go to meetings every night. You can just go one or two times a month, you know. See, when you're sponsoring yourself, you don't have to work these steps, you know. Now, you don't have to do nothing. And see, when you sponsor yourself, you don't have to read the big book. You know, Playboy every now and then, you know, something intellectual like that. You know, you just don't have to do a whole lot, you know. And all of a sudden, I started having these intellectual thoughts again. Tell you what I had. I had a little thought then. My thought was, you know, Dennis, you know, since you can't drink, maybe there's some other stuff out there you can use that don't start with an A. After all, this is AA. This is not MA. Yeah, that's right. That's right. But, you know, what the big book says about something, some thought parallel to our, some insane thought parallel to our sound reasoning. I knew that that was not right. I knew I couldn't use another substance. So you know what I did. I said, this sounds like a matter I need to talk to my sponsor about, you know. And when you're sponsoring yourself, he's always there, you know. You take off from the meeting, he's in the rearview mirror. So on the way home that night, me and my sponsor went by and got us some alternate substances. And 2 weeks later, me and my sponsor were up in Rutherford County, North Carolina, 140 miles from home, drunk and half-naked, you know. I went up there with a three-piece suit on. I came back with the coat and vest, you know. And I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous on February 1st of 1981. And those old guys, the grease spot bunch, were sitting back there on the box. And you know what they say to you? We've been waiting on you. I'd have gave anything not to hear that. I think that night I probably did the only thing I've ever done right in Alcoholics Anonymous. I came back. That night they began to talk to me in a language that I understood. See, I know now when they ain't got your insurance money and your mama's money, they can talk to you in a language that you understand. Old James asked me. I said, Dennis, what are you doing about prayer and meditation? My natural response was, what? Because while he was saying it again, I was getting my lie together. For some reason, I had lost the ability to lie.
Couldn't lie to him anymore. I said nothing. Man, that felt good. I didn't have to worry about what lie I was going to cover that lie with. Just, Dennis, did you use prayer and meditation the day that you drank? No. So much relief in telling the truth. You know, I've come to the conclusion that the truth doesn't take a long time to tell. You can usually tell the truth in one or two words. And James said, well, Dennis, how do you expect to stay sober if you don't use the power greater than yourself, this program, and the people in it? He says, it's obvious to me that you can't keep yourself sober. Man, that was profound. Don't know why I had not come to that conclusion myself in the last 10 years. It says a lot about why I need to be at meetings. Well, when I went home that night, those old guys had given to me the basis for my recovery. I woke up this morning with those same ideas. From that day, just like this morning, I knew that Dennis Nance couldn't keep Dennis Nance sober. I knew that day and I knew this morning that Dennis Nance could not replace his alcohol with any other mood-altering chemical. I knew that day and I know this morning that Dennis has to effect and maintain a relationship with God as he understands him or as he misunderstands him. Dennis Nance began some prayer and meditation. And I knew then and I know today that Dennis Nance is going to have to follow instructions from someone who is reasonably successful at staying sober a day at a time. Now, I didn't like any of that, but I started praying that night. My first 6 months in the program, I had Ivy for a sponsor. Ivy was unemployed, unemployable, unmarried, living with his mother, last drunk on wintergreen alcohol. I told AD, I said, AD, that guy's crazy. He said, well, that's why you're a sponsor. You're crazy. You know, it hurt my feelings. They wouldn't listen to me complain about my wife and my kids and my job. They said, you do the right thing. You go there and you give a day's work to a day's pay. And Ivy worked with me through the first 3 steps. And then Ivy sent me to Lou. Lou worked with me from step 4 to step 9. And then they sent me to AD. AD became my first permanent sponsor. I thought, oh, he said, what step are you on? I said, well, I just finished step 9. I began to make amends. He said, well, let's start at step 1. That's what seems like where you are. Oh, man. A.D. did the most loving thing, I think, that's ever been done to Dennis Nance. A.D., in his living room on Wednesday nights, taught me what he knew of the first 164 pages of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. A.D. insisted that I work these steps as a means of ongoing recovery. A.D. insisted that I make coffee, that I mop floors. A.D. insisted that I empty ashtrays and pick up cigarette butts. And I didn't even have to smoke to do it. He allowed me to do that. I didn't realize that A.D. was loving me. A.D. wrote the definition of love on a 3x5 card. Because A.D. insisted that I begin to try to express love to my wife and quit telling her that and start following up that up with action. Man, that's tough. A.D. insisted that I support my children in Alatine. He insisted that I let them take a car down. And he insisted that I stay away from the Eastern Alatine Roundup and allow those children to work their own program. I've come to conclude that Alatine and Al-Anon does the same thing for family members of alcoholics as Alcoholics Anonymous does. It rebuilds the human mind and heart from the inside out. And I think they deserve their recovery just so much. It certainly meant so much to me. Well, Libra went back to school. Libra just came, you know, Al-Anon just gave up. She just became my own person. She came home one day and said, Dennis, I've been laid off from my job at Levi Strauss. I said, well, that's no problem. You'll find another. She said, well, not unless it comes home and get me, because I ain't looking for one. I'm going back to college. And went back. No problem. Just didn't know. So she went back to college, completed her degree. Those two little nail-biting discipline problems finished high school. Dennis did enough to get by. Michelle became an honor student and later on went to college and majored in, what is it, recreational therapy. Just got out of college this May, too. Oh, man. Thought I'd miss you. Went to college on an installment plan like I did. And Dennis eventually got married, and he has three little granddaughters. I have three granddaughters. My own little cheerleading squad. Keep them in trouble all the time, you know. Let them sleep in my bed, whether Libra likes it or not. Yeah. They believe everything I tell them, and I don't even have to tell them. They can find a way to kick the seatbelt off, you know, whatever they want. I learned so much from them. Now, the middle one looks like Libra, talks like Libra. I've noticed pictures. She even poses like Libra. And she just naturally knows how to live a day at a time. Took her to church a couple of Sundays ago. And cute little Naomi. If my other two granddaughters sit on my right, she sits on the left. We go out to eat, she wants to pop out where you're going to sit, because she's going to sit near me. And Naomi's in church, the preacher's preaching. You know how Baptist preachers preach. Oh, they get a little action, you know. So the preacher's hooping and hollering, and everybody's talking back to him. Church's getting rowdy, and Naomi's playing, crawling up under the seat, holding my Bible, writing a little bit with ink pen, straightening out my necktie, crawl up under the chair, come back up, stop a while. Listen a little while long, goes back through that process. But all of a sudden, she stops and starts listening to the minister intensely. And she says, Papa. I said, what? She says, God gonna come today. I said, I don't think so. She started right back playing. You know what I mean? If he ain't coming today, I'm gonna get it on, you know. Learned so much from her. My son has become a very sensitive person. He's going through divorce now, and he's just so gentle, so much more mature than I was at 26. Libra and I are closer than we ever were. It's amazing. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and used to watch you interact as couples and wonder if I'd ever be able to treat my wife like that. And it's happening. It's happening. This is my third, Greenville's the third place I've lived sober. I lived in Charlotte and Greensboro and now Greenville. When I got to Charlotte, I got down there and I tried to tell them how we're done in Greensboro. And they were nice to me, too. They let me make coffee. They didn't even tell me to shut up. Took me a while to get a sponsor there, and I just felt like I didn't fit in for a long time. But I got to Greenville, I knew what the deal was. I knew I had to get a sponsor, I knew I had to get a home group, and I knew I had to get active. And I've done that. In the middle of that move, I continued going to school. I eventually completed a degree in psychology, and I'm presently working on a master's. I should complete that master's program this spring. You know, those are things that I never thought I'd be able to do. Dreams and that I had forfeited. I've come to conclude that once a person, any person, begins to live by spiritual principles, and that's what the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, their potential is only limited by their ability to trust those principles. That's what you've given me. In the process of all this moving, my mother's relationship changed. Mom doesn't know a whole lot about Alcoholics Anonymous. She just knows that something changed her son. Moving to South Carolina, Mom was concerned. She was not sure that Alcoholics Anonymous was in South Carolina. And I stopped by one day in the move, and she said, Dennis Eldred, when they call you by both names, that's serious business. She said, Dennis Eldred, don't you leave here unless I see you, boy. I said, yes, ma'am. Okay. Boy, don't you leave here without me seeing you. Yes, ma'am. Come here, boy. Yes, ma'am. Went back to the room. She said, boy. See, Mom is so Christian that she can't say alcoholic. Alcoholic's a bad word to Mom, she said. Drunk is not. But an alcoholic is. She said, boy. I said, yes, ma'am. She said, when you get down there, I want you to get in touch with those people. I knew what she was talking about. I said, Mom, what people? She hit me in the back of the head and said, boy, you know what people. Not only do I love you, And I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And I love the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. They are difficult to do sometimes. They're difficult to do most of the time. But I love the benefits of them. I've tasted just enough that I want some more. I must stay. You've given me so much. You've given me so much that Mom even appreciates it. She can't say that. So I'll say it for you. Velma likes what you've done to her son. Thank you all, and God bless you.